Hello everybody. It was a dogged, scrappy, quite dull affair Friday night, but Sale ultimately had just enough to nudge past Worcester 20 points to 13. My name is Lewis, welcome back inside the Shark Tank, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by my co-hosts, Alex and James. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, thanks mate. It wasn't a pretty win, and I probably would rather have watched Bath Wasps with the benefit of hindsight, but we got a win, so that's all that matters, isn't it? How are you?
I'm very well, and like you, wish I didn't do a Sale Sharks podcast so I could have watched the thriller at the wreck between Bath and Wasps. It sounds like the best game of the year so far, but ultimately, you know, 20 points to 13 win is much more my cup of tea, as long as it's Sale involved. James, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. I'm still struggling to sort of compute that the answer to all of our problems ever was essentially a Cameron Redpath, Paolo Adogwu centre partnership. And I'm still trying to get my head around that. But otherwise, just really, really pleased we got over the line. I know it wasn't pretty, but two wins in a row from where we were just a few weeks ago, we'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, let's not lose sight of the facts, because I think there was a lot on Twitter, etc. last night. It was a pretty dull performance from both teams. It was a pretty boring game, like, let's be honest. But it's a win that puts Sale back up to third, at least until at least for the next couple of hours, depending on the outcome of the Newcastle game on Saturday afternoon. You know, it puts us back in the top four. It's two wins on the bounce. We've now got a record of four wins and two losses from six games. The team's still sort of failing to fire properly. I think that's pretty fair to say, but it's a win, and, you know, we actually saw a bit of the sort of diamond era grit kind of come through and secure the win. So, Alex, let's go from the top then. Not too much to talk about. I think we'll probably go through this game pretty quickly. But let's start with probably the difference maker on the pitch, at least in the first half, which was Faf de Klerk. I mean, how good was he, especially in that first 40 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely. He has these moments, doesn't he, Faf, where he just turns it on. And you see all of that talent that we've kind of been, we always hope will come out in a game, but is a bit up and down. And I think you saw it when he just scored his try after, I mean, let's talk about the try. It's a great snipe round the corner, really, really intelligent, really quick, gets our momentum going and then finishes it, which is something we've really struggled to do and really struggled to do for the rest of the game, actually finishing a bit of pressure. But then I think the moment for me where I was like, God, he's on it tonight, is when the kickoff comes back and he absolutely nails a clearing kick miles downfield. You know, perfect, like right into as far as he can get it with his boot. It was just absolutely superb. And that's kind of when he's on form, he's really, really on form, I think, isn't he? And last night in the first half, he was. And I thought, you know, we've been guilty in the past of taking Faf off too late when we need to change or because we need to rest him. And I think last night we maybe took him off a little bit too early. And now obviously the game was stagnating in that second half. But, you know, it was really, really exciting to see him perform like that in the first half because I don't think we've seen it from him for quite a while. So I think, you know, it was a glimpse. It wasn't all perfect, but it definitely was Faf, you know, showing his best. And hopefully that'll kind of be the kicker on for him to get back into the form we kind of got used to about two seasons ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think as de Klerk goes, as Sale goes at the moment, I think that's been the case for a couple of years now. And I think that was epitomising the fact that first half our performance was looking pretty good. You know, we were on top in terms of, you know, sort of significant opportunities with ball in hand. The possession and territory was about equal, but it was kind of slanting in Sale's favour given the nature of that possession for Worcester. You know, and James Sale went into the break at, you know, 13 points to 3 up, and the game in the second half, as it's been wont to do recently, seems to just kind of stagnate a little bit. And I'm sure you'll be happy with 4 points, but do you think given the strong first half we had, we really should have kicked on and won by more earlier?
Well, we seem to be performing for about 40 to 50 minutes a game at the moment. And I'm not 100% sure why that's the case. It was the same against Gloucester. You know, we sort of performed better in the second half. So it's one or the other. And it's difficult to put your finger on it, really. I mean, the first half I thought was our best performance for some time. And we should have been further ahead on the scoreboard. We both should have scored more points, but also giving away that penalty at the end of the half, I felt was just unforced, really. We allowed Worcester to take a little bit of momentum into the break. And we said on our WhatsApp group, well, I said, you know, the first score in the second half is quite important. And it always is. But I just thought for Sale, with where we're at mentally, you know, if we'd got the first score, we could have gone and won that game by a distance. And instead, it made it into a right old scrap. So I think first half, I was really pleased with a number of things. Firstly, I was really pleased with Faf, as Alex really said really well, I think. You know, he was up for it. He wanted to do one over, I think, on Huard, and he did. He did. He was he looked like every time he got the ball, he was going to do something. And also, I thought Sam James was excellent at 15 in the first half. You know, I don't know about him and Luke's genes, but under the high ball, you just never see them miss one, do you? It's weird. Their depth perception is genuinely quite phenomenal. And Sam James just is such a beautiful footballer. I mean, like Faf's kick, clearing kick, Sam James had one almost exactly the same, that he well into the Worcester half with a clearing kick from his own 22. There was also some amazing football skills when there was a ball kicked through from Worcester, and he did like a Cruyff turn with it on the touchline to keep it in the field of play. I mean, he's a wonderful footballer, isn't he? We can talk about where his footballing skills is best placed in the team. But look, you know, you basically plonk him 10, 12, 13, 15. He does a job at Premiership level. And then finally, you know, Bevan Rod. I don't want to steal everyone from everything. But, you know, he is, for 20 years of age, we've seen glimpses of what he can do around the pitch. He's got some good footwork. We've seen an outrageous offload before his bad injury. And he's clearly built to be over the ball at the breakdown, and he's very difficult to shift. He got two turnover penalties in quick succession that, you know, were really very impressive. But for me, by far the most impressive out of all of that is, at 20 years of age, he held his own in the scrum against Nick Shonnett. In my preview, I said that he would take Morozov to the cleaners, yeah, because of his lower center of gravity and things. Bevan Rod, to, you know, he's not going to be destroying anybody in the scrum anytime soon, but to hold your own in the scrum at 20, you just don't see that. I think he could really push on, you know, if he stays fit and he builds some natural strength without overdoing it. I think he could play for England.
We'll circle back to Rod, because there's him and another academy talent that worth mentioning slightly later. But we've kind of, off the top, we've spoken about the control Sale had in the first half. We spoke about the impact that De Klerk and Sam James had on the game. I want to kind of bring it back to another kind of key part of that axis, which is AJ McGinty. Because I think, Alex, in the first half especially, we saw something a little bit different from AJ that we've not seen for a while. And I am, you know, interested to know whether or not that's an influence of Paul Deacon's coaching and maybe some of the extra sort of work that's being done there. But what we saw from McGinty in a game where, again, Sale kind of struggled to put a lot of phases together, really struggled to kind of put together an incisive attack, we saw a much more varied approach from AJ in terms of kicking out hand. Right from the start, there was a lovely sort of kick pass over the top to Tom Roebuck. We saw him do the chip and chase over the Worcester defensive line a couple of times. I think Worcester played a pretty good game defensively. And what we saw from AJ was a response to that in terms of the onus he was putting on himself to create chances.
Yeah, I think what we should say off the top is that Worcester's defence was really, really good last night. I mean, you know, they were 91% tackle success rate. So they, you know, they are a hard team to get through. And I think that's probably the best. I mean, it might be the best defensive performance they've put in all season. It must certainly be up there, because, you know, we just couldn't get through them, could we? Any of our kind of, you know, they put pressure on us at the right time, in the right place. They, you know, they organise themselves well. And we just, quite a lot of the time, I think, you know, there's been times this season where we've made defences look quite organised and quite good through either slow ball or poor decisions or, you know, isolating ourselves. But on last night, I thought we were playing quite well, but Worcester's defence was just too good. And you're absolutely right that the way to then beat that defence is through a bit of invention. And it's something we've not seen that much from AJ, because his sort of way of breaking the line generally is to do that incredible show and go, or to pull a pass at the right time, or just to step someone who's got quite a good step on him. But what I don't think we have seen is these little chips over the top that kind of created Jonny Ross's try. And like you say, that kick to Roebuck in the first half was absolutely superb. It was really well executed. And what I thought it did really well was, you know, it went straight on the full to Roebuck. It was so, you know, pitch perfect to get to him. And then it moved the whole game up the field, because we, to that point, we'd not really been able to get out of our own half with ball in hand. And what that did was send Roebuck halfway up the field, who then puts in a kick over the top, a little bit heavy, but it ends up with a Worcester 22 dropout. So Sale get the ball back and have territory in Worcester's half. And I think, you know, it's that kind of, those kind of game management areas. And I think Faf was doing it a little bit in the first half as well, you know, sort of grubbering through, that are really, really valuable and probably what we should have done more of, if anything. Because I think we did enough. But, you know, there was opportunity to do more of that, because there was a lot of time spent, especially in the second half, running at a brick wall that wasn't breaking.
I think it, as well, in game sort of five of Deacon's tenure, it does feel like the way in which we're approaching defences and our game plan is starting to evolve a little bit. And kind of what I hinted at before is these kind of more kicking at hand, more readily sort of kicking short and in play. You know, there's a little bit of rugby league to it, and obviously that's where Deacon's background is. But James, I wanted to ask you a little bit actually about kind of why Sale's attack stagnated a little bit in the second half. Particularly, we seem to play a lot of our set pieces off of Sam Hill as the first receiver. And I think overall, Hill had a pretty good game. He straightens up so quickly that it really forces the defences to kind of have to account for him and actually take a couple of steps back. You know, a really, really nice way of sort of countering a blitz. But second half, we started to play a lot with him as the first receiver, and the passing skills maybe aren't there compared to, you know, your fly half or indeed your outside centre who can also play fly half. So I wanted to get your sort of thoughts on Sam Hill's performance, because I know you're a big champion of him. But actually, you know, why do you think that we sort of deferred to Hill as first receiver and actually didn't play as much off of AJ in that second half? Do you think that is also an impact of the evolution that we're seeing from Paul Deacon as head coach?
Well, we did try and play a little bit different. I mean, the what we were trying to do is get AJ in behind, yeah, so that we have our... We used to do it with Cipriani all of the time, so that we have our playmaker that little bit further out taking decisions on the outside defender, who then has to make the decision to commit and smash someone, or you know, you've got your back three coming through. And so we used to do it when Cipriani was with us all the time. And we do it as well when Sam James plays in the centre. And it works better with Rob Dupree as a 10 coming in behind than it does with AJ. So I think there's a few things there, is that we kind of had a playing structure. We're trying to play a little bit differently than what we have been trying to do in the last 2 or 3 weeks. But maybe we just haven't had the people with the right skill sets to do it. Because what we've got there is you've got Sam Hill. The problem that he had was, I think he is capable of doing it, because if he's offering to pass and it's not on, he's strong enough in the tackle to still get over the gain line. Equally, if he goes over the gain line a few times and that keeps the defenders honest, they can't commit to the defenders going round behind, and it enables him to then pass it behind and it creates space. That's what tends to happen. I think there was a few things that went wrong. Firstly, Sam Hill, we didn't get on the front foot early enough in the game. We hardly used him just as a full-out crash ball, running at pace onto it. Yeah, we were using him as the decision-maker, exactly as you said. And the problem with that is they started to just read him, right? And when he then made that pass where you know, basically Ollie Morris read it and absolutely crunched the McGinty coming in behind, that Sam Hill then lost confidence. And he then didn't give the ball, but he was still showing that he was thinking of doing it. Whereas what we should have done is actually simplified the game at that point and just got him powering forward again to keep the defence narrow and honest. You know, the ball going in behind, the whole point of that is that you hold defenders before you do it. And he wasn't doing it, which is why we weren't able to get on the outside and we were getting smashed. So partly I think it was that we didn't get Sam Hill on the front foot, and then he lost confidence after shipping the ball on when it wasn't on. Yeah, so I think it was a mixture of those two things. And also the fact that we don't necessarily have the players in the right position. I don't think McGinty is our best tenor at doing that. I think he's capable of going in behind around the back. But then also with Rob Dupree as a 13, he doesn't hold the outside channel as much because he doesn't have the pace. So the defence is also confident that it can cover back if the 13 basically has a bit of a space to move into, yeah, because he doesn't necessarily have the pace on the outside. So I think I think that there's a number of things there that we've got a 13 that's not in the right channel. It's not our best 10 for that type of move. And I think Sam Hill didn't have a brilliant game. We didn't use him properly and he lost confidence after a poor decision. So I hope that's a comprehensive answer for you.
I was going to say that was brilliantly put. And I think it surfaces, you know, some of the issues that we saw, which led to a bit of a stagnant offence on Friday night. And it also brings us very neatly onto our favourite topic at the moment, which is Rob Dupree at 13. And I know, Alex, you have some thoughts on the performance or lack thereof from Dupree on Friday.
Yeah, well, I think I made this point last night that Rob Dupree didn't have a bad game at 13. He just didn't do anything. And that's not harsh on, you know, I'm not trying to be harsh on Rob Dupree there, but, you know, we've got a 13 there who isn't really offering us any pace in the outside channel because we're not using him like that. He's not offering us the hit-up kind of option, like if we had Rohan there or Manu Tuilagi. And you know, we're not using him as a playmaking option because we're playing off Sam Hill to AJ to then, you know, I think maybe the idea is that we play off Sam Hill, get AJ in behind, and then we've got Rob Dupree as a second distributor in that playing behind. But we weren't getting it to him. And as a result, it just felt kind of like he had no impact on the game. You know, Sam Hill had a minimal impact on the game, but was involved and was busy. And I think Rob Dupree just didn't, you know, I can't really remember anything he did that was, you know, that was properly impactful on the game.
He had a forward pass in the first half, and I think that's the only thing I can remember from him.
Well, what I would say is that I think it was his best performance at 13. In that, he has learned to defend better at 13.
Yeah,
and I think he does deserve a bit of credit for that. He's playing out of position. And 13, as Alex has said before, is the most difficult place to defend. It's not to say he didn't potentially miss any tackles, but the way he was making his decisions to close off the outside for Worcester, I think he played an important role in our defensive line at 13, and I think that was an improvement. I'm not advocating picking him there. I don't think we should. I've said that on previous pods, but fair play to him. I think he's learned how to defend in that position in two or three games, and I think he played an important part in our defensive line. So that's my case for him this time.
He didn't actually miss any tackles, so you bang on. So yeah, that's a massive improvement from like last week where he missed loads and was at like 50-60% tackle completion rate.
And the penalty that he did give away right at the end of the first half was, you know, pretty unlucky as well. Like it was a high tackle that was kind of given away. But, you know, those are 50-50 sometimes, you know, it's a seatbelt tackle, etc. It could have easily gone the other way. But yeah, I think the kind of issue is, you know, we're looking at this game, you know, Sale win by 7 points. You know, we probably should have won by more. We probably should have put Worcester to the sword, given that our relative strength on paper. You know, we're looking at, well, why is the attack not working? And, you know, you have to look at the fact that we're playing a lot of players out of position at the moment. And unfortunately, you know, I think he gets a lot of the criticism. But, you know, 13 is a very visible channel. And when you got Sam James, who's one of the best Premiership players one of the best players in the Premiership at that position, and you're not playing him there, I think it does draw on a bit of criticism, Alex.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, he is a 10. He's not a 13. He can operate at 12. We've seen that. But he's, you know, 12 is much easier to play coming from 10 than 13 is. It's just so different, isn't it? And I think when you've got, as you rightly say, Sam James, who is one of the Premiership's best 13s playing fullback, it's just frustrating as a fan to kind of sit there and think, why are we not finding a solution that gets our best players in their best positions? And you kind of understand the need maybe sometimes for that, but we've still got Luke James on the bench, and as much as he wasn't in absolutely electric form, he wasn't performing poorly at all, was he? So it's frustrating to kind of see that, because Luke James didn't even come off the bench last night. So yeah, I think that's the frustration for me, that it's not that Rob Dupree is a bad option. It's just that there are really good options that aren't being utilised.
Yeah, we talk about frustration. I think the last negative thing to mention before we go on to some other positives, and I know it's one that James has a lot of thoughts on, is the penalty try right at the end that actually ultimately gave Worcester a losing bonus point out of the game. James, at that point, so we're 20 points to six up. You know, John O'Ross had just scored after, you know, a number of phases on the Worcester try line. The game was pretty much wrapped up, and Worcester get a rolling maul with a couple of minutes to go. I know you in particular were very displeased about the sequence of events that led to Worcester being given a penalty try, and that ultimately resulted in them getting the ball back with a chance to tie the game with a few seconds to go.
Well, it was just stupid. Tom Curry's decision was stupid, right? I love Tom Curry, yeah? I have a poster of him on my wall, right? You know, he is a fucking hero. But, I know that pressure and, you know, probably a bit fatigued as well right at the end of the game means that you don't make always the right decision. But at the end of the day, the only way that Worcester had to potentially win that game was to give away a penalty try, because it meant that the conversion didn't need to be taken and there was a restart, yeah? You know, it was obvious that Worcester suddenly had the push on and they were going to score a penalty try there. And the decision that he made to be yellow carded, so he went down to 14 players and give away the penalty try, meant that Worcester had the opportunity. Now they kicked it out, took the losing bonus point, got off the bottom of the table. Fair enough. But as a fan, it really does make you scream, go, oh my God, here we go again. Only Sale, what's going on? Like when Jono went over, I was like, oh, I messaged you guys. I said, I wish they'd done that in the 50th minute so that I could have relaxed for the whole of the second half rather than the 78th minute. You know, but at least now we can just enjoy the last 90 seconds and we've won basically, you know. And then suddenly the tension just ramped back up again and we could just do without it. So maybe just a polite message to the team just to say, well done for winning, but please look after our hearts and our lung capacity as well.
I think there's a point here. You are right, James, that it's typical Sale. But if a maul is going to go over the line, for some reason we think it's better to bring it down and give away a penalty try than it is to just let them score it in the corner and then have a go at the conversion. And I get that there's an element of, oh, you want to be a fighter and you want to, you know, stop him at all costs. But, you know, on that occasion, it's going over the line. And, you know, we've just, instead of conceding five, you are right, we've conceded a guaranteed seven, we've given them the restart, and we've lost the man to the bin. So it's just frustrating. And the other frustrating thing is that, you know, the sequence of events leading up to that, we score our try, they kick off, Rob Dupree drops it in the tackle, and that's another point I want to come on to, that we dropped the ball in the tackle far too many times. You know, we then, Tom Curry picks it up and takes it into a ruck. We then have the opportunity to exit. We throw it in field to give ourselves the better angle / run down the clock and then give away a penalty at the ruck, which they then kick to the corner. And it's just incredibly basic execution of exits from kickoffs that we struggle with. And honestly, the amount of kickoffs I'm not sure if we actually successfully took a kickoff in this game, because all I can think about is that one and then JP Dupree dropping it twice.
Yeah, JP Dupree, he struggles to catch the ball in the air sometimes. It does worry me for a second row.
But we were 10 out of 10 from the line-out. It makes absolutely no sense, because there's less pressure on him in that scenario than there is in a line-out.
Yeah, I actually think that the less pressure he's under, the more likely it is for him to just knock it on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what JP Dupree is good for, though? And I, this is really difficult to quantify, but I've been really impressed with it since he joined, is his pressure that he puts on opposing scrum halves at box kicks is unlike anything I've seen watching rugby. Now, a big part of that is because he's 6'9". He's fucking massive, right? And you can do a lot more when you're that big compared to some of these other players. But what I noticed with Dupree is he actually angles his body away from the scrum half, so his back's facing the scrum half, and he actually tries to charge the kick down with one arm. And what that does is it gives him an extra little bit of length, not that he needs it, to try and get a hand on it, rather than going kind of straight forward with two hands up. And Huard did a pretty good job of managing it. You know, Worcester, it didn't really, you know, lead to much on Friday. But I remember in the Gloucester game, he had a real good go at Stephen Varney, the young scrum half who came on for Gloucester. And all it does is it just changes that trajectory by a couple of degrees, and it stops the box kick from going 15 metres, and it said it goes 10. And that puts Sale in a good territory position as well. So I won't hear a bad thing about JP Dupree again. Thank you.
Fair play.
So look, we're sort of spiralling into negativity here because we're Sale fans. So I want to kind of bring it back with the last couple of discussion points. First of all, James, I mean, you mentioned him off the top. But you're the academy guy, so I know you'd be very pleased. Bevan Rodd and Tom Roebuck, I thought both had really good games. Rodd was outstanding. Roebuck was solid, you know, and just generally quite good. And, you know, like I said, you're the academy guy, but for me, they just look ready for full-time first-team duty.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, obviously, the wings weren't really in the game. Yeah, Yard has actually been fully committed the last few weeks, and we have to give him credit there. Roebuck, you know, his advantage is, despite being sort of 19, is that, you know, he's physically able to compete. He took a couple of really good high balls. One didn't quite go his way with Nick David. But, you know, I think he's going to be useful under the high ball because he's quite a tall guy and he gets off the ground. He's not rapid, but he's definitely quick enough. He was in space once and kicked ahead, and unfortunately the kick was just too long, and actually he kicked far too early, which he allowed the defence to turn and get there first. But I do think that he's one of those guys that we need to get into the game, because I think he's going to be really difficult to bring down. He will slow as he gets older because he'll be putting on more weight, but then he'll be more difficult to tackle. As he's come through the age groups, there's always been a question mark as to whether he'll end up as an outside centre or as a winger. But I think at this point in his career, he's definitely a 14. He's done nothing so far in his last two games to warrant him being dropped. I mean, you know, our other options haven't offered more than he's been offering. Therefore, he has the jersey and continues. Rodd was, you know, one of the three best players on the pitch in the first half. And as I've said, everything that I need to say about him, I think he could play for England. And I think, you know, normally Harrison misses the first basically six games of the season, struggling with injury, and we'd be completely screwed. But, you know, to have Rodd now as first choice and Morozov coming off the bench, which I think is, you know, Morozov is more of an impact player for me. I think we're really well set at Loosehead now. Very, very fortunate.
Just on Roebuck, I think what really impressed me, aside from the fact that he looks completely comfortable given he's about 12 at this level, he had a really, really good game. But his ability in the air, and you alluded to it, James, it was just superb. He didn't have any kind of negative impact from taking the ball. So he took three kicks and then he also tapped one back. And then there was also that one where he put the pressure on the Worcester winger, which got us a scrum on their 22. So, you know, he's just that ability and that maturity to kind of take those high balls is not only incredible for someone of his age in a game like this, but also better than our current wingers. And that's kind of one area where, you know, we were picking Hammersley and Luke James on the wing to try and counter that high ball threat. You don't need to if you've got Tom Roebuck, because he looks absolutely solid under the high ball, doesn't it?
And, you know, McGinty has done this before. We haven't seen it much in the last season and a half, but his crossfield kicks, he can execute them quite well. So having a tall winger who can get off the ground on the right wing, you know, it adds an extra dimension and makes sure that both in selection and also the way that the opposition defensive line is set up will always be wide. And that's going to be important for us, because when we get the Dupriers back, when we go through the middle and do offloading, yeah, it's going to be really important to be making sure we're stretching the opposition's defence across the whole pitch, and the threat of a crossfield kick does that. And we basically haven't executed anything like that for about a season and a half.
I was going to say, it also opens up opportunities for our centres. And, you know, a lot's been made of Van Rensburg slimming down and adding a bit of pace. And actually, as you very rightly said, James, if we can spread an opposing defence wide because of the threat of a crossfield kick, the gaps in the midfield channels just get that little bit wider. And actually, Van Rensburg's now got the pace to just go straight through them and create broken field play.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if it's not just straight through, I mean, with Van Rensburg, you have to be pretty close to him, I think, to bring him down, because he can bounce off individual tackles. And that's why teams aim to double team on him. And as I said, it's the same for the Dupreez, because, you know, everyone's trying to stop the offload when they tackle him. So they have to commit two defenders, one to get him around the leg and the other to stop the arms being able to offload. But if you've only got one-on-one defenders against the Dupreez, we're going to be offloading for fun. So, no, it's definitely just an extra string to our bow, which I'm quite pleased about. I mean, look, he's not set the world on fire yet. I think he was really unfortunate not to get that try awarded last week. I don't know how much of a prolific scorer he'll be. He has been pretty good in the A's groups just because of his size, I think. You know, you get him quite close to the line, he's quite difficult to stop at the age groups. It's going to be more difficult for him, obviously, at senior level, and he's going to have to add things to his game. Question marks over his kicking game, I think, is probably the thing. But defensively, under the high ball, he looks solid. Offensively, he looks solid under the high ball. He's got long legs with some pace, and he's clearly got strength. So I think he's in possession of the jersey. And it's up to McGuigan and Solomonas to try and get it back off him.
Right. I think that brings us pretty neatly to the end of the Worcester game. Alex, are there any sort of stats that are jumping out to suggest that we've missed any of our key performers from Friday?
No, I think a quick mention to the back row, Ross Curry and Beaumont, just defensively. They were really strong, and defensively as a team, we were really strong. We've had a couple of dodgy weeks, especially against that Wasps team, but we're back up at 90%, so that's good to see. Attacking-wise, nothing too exciting. Again, I mentioned for Johnny Ross, who made 18 metres off 11 carries, which usually makes 11 carries for about 3 metres. Quite a good, I mentioned it before, but lineouts, to have zero lineouts lost on the cover of the stats this week was incredible. I'm baffled by it, but really, really good to see. So good to see that Acker and JP Dupreez axis is working. I don't want to end, I'm going to end on a negative, aren't I? I think we were a little bit naive at the breakdown again, gave away 4 penalties for either not releasing or not rolling away, which is just frustrating, and gave up 5 turnovers for dropped ball. So I've said it every week, but we just need to hold on to the ball, and we keep the majority of our turnovers that we give up are from dropping it ourselves, which is just frustrating. But no, I think we've pretty much covered everything. Defensively, pretty strong. Attack-wise, we were good in the first half. We were about 3 or 4 metres a carry in the first half and then down to like 2 in the second half. So I think that kind of showed in the game. But overall, you know, the areas where we've been a bit concerned, penalties, we were down at 11, still more than Worcester, but not horrendous. Lineouts, we've said, defensively strong. Just need to get the attack going, and we've talked about that. So no, I think we've pretty much covered everything there. And, you know, a pretty positive overall, and I think there's sort of signs of rebuilding going back into Europe.
Absolutely. So Sale's next game is away at Edinburgh at 5:30 on Saturday afternoon. So James, we did an Edinburgh preview, and we've kind of talked about them at length previously. What I wanted to ask you, as our resident kind of chief scout, I guess, is kind of, is there anything new that we need to kind of factor in to this Edinburgh team? Or can we expect a very similar side to the one that actually came down to the AJ Bell and punched us in the mouth a couple of weeks ago?
Well, yes, there's something significant changed, really, because they've won the last 2 games, whereas they lost the first 3. They've lost, what was it, 6 out of their 10 games this season they've lost. They lost the first 3, as I said. Of the ones that they've won, right, they won away at the Scarlets 6-3. They won away at us 15-16. And they won at home against Glasgow 10-7. So 3 of their wins, they've won by either 3 points or 1 point. So they have had a really, really tough season. You know, they're second from bottom in their Pro 14 conference. But two things that have changed. Three things. Firstly, they've won their last two games. So a bit like us, maybe there's a bit of a corner turned there, but they've had a bigger corner to turn. I mean, we're in the top four in the Premiership and they're second from bottom in the Pro 14. Secondly, going into Europe, they did rest some of their Scotland stars against us. They were only just coming back. And that explains really their problems for most of the season, because without the Scotland international players, they've really struggled for depth. And that's why they've been really struggling in the Pro 14 and really scrapping around. They're all back now. Just having a look at them. I mean, they're full of them. Stuart McAnally, WP Nell, Jamie Ritchie, Jacko van der Vaart, Duhan van der Merwe. Both of those are like the latest project players. That does make me feel a little bit sick about where rugby is at internationally. Rory Sutherland, Simon Bergen, Darcy Gray and Blair Kinghorn. I mean, these are international players all coming back in. And then the third thing is that they haven't played since the 2nd of January, so they're going to be pretty fresh coming in to play against us. So I think that will also play a part. You know, I don't know how fatigued we'll be from this week's game. We obviously brought a few people off at a reasonable time with a view to playing them in Europe. We can talk about whether that's the right decision. What I would flag is that they've only scored more than 20 points in a game this season, in their 10 games, twice, both in losses. And they've not scored more than 18 points in a game that they've won. I think it's one of those. If we're able to suddenly get our attacking game into order and we score three tries, you should be beating Edinburgh, basically. Basically, we should win, but have we got anything to play for? Is a win priority? What I'm really looking forward to, if it happens, because we might rest him, but head-to-head of Hamish Watson against Tom Curry, both potential Lions open side contenders, both terrific players, that it would be a hell of a battle. My instinct is Tom Curry be rested for the game. What about you guys? Yeah, how is Sale going to balance this? Do we send a load of youngsters? Do we rest our stars? Or is getting momentum and just continuing winning the most important thing?
Well, I think that raises a really good point, because just to sort of set the scene, as it stands, Sale are eighth in Pool 1 of the Champions Cup. We've got 1 point. And all the teams above us have at least recorded one win. So as it stands, and with the way the format is going to work this year, we're probably looking at best at qualifying for the Challenge Cup quarterfinals in position 5 to 8. And so fundamentally, I think this will have to be deprioritised versus the Premiership. We're probably not going to have much of a chance to break into the top four in our pool and proceed in the Champions Cup. Even if we win two games, the deck is just stacked against us. But from my perspective, we've had a pretty tumultuous couple of months with Diamond leaving, a lot of the turnover on the club, et cetera, et cetera. We're actually starting to build a bit of momentum now. We had three losses under Deacon to start. We've won two on the bounce without really changing the team. My personal thought would be to kind of keep it pretty much the same, maybe sub out one or two of our players that we really need to rest for the Premiership. Tom Curry being a great example, just because we're going to lose him to England pretty soon. So you want to maximise the time that we do have with him in the Premiership. But ultimately, it is going to be a bit of a balance between, well, you know, what's more important, the Premiership or qualifying for the Challenge Cup. I think we should really be aiming to finish in that 5 to 8 position and at least continue our European campaign in some form. But I appreciate that there's going to be a lot of pressure to make sure we can keep our form going in the Premiership. So that's a bit of a non-answer, I admit, and I'll hopefully Alex will give a slightly more direct one. But I think we have to be very careful here that we continue to prioritise the Premiership, but don't undo all the hard work that we've done in the last 2 weeks with the same sort of squad in actually getting a couple of wins under our belt, because that will translate into Premiership form as well. Alex?
Yeah, I agree. I think first of all, it's a tough ask to go away to Edinburgh and win. And I think what we do risk is sending our best team there not having a great game, it being, you know, going away to a Richard Cockerill side is never easy. You know, so we could put out Pfaff and Tom Curry and all the bells and whistles and still end up losing. So I think, yeah, you're right. There's an element of pragmatism about it. Certainly agree on Tom Curry, given we're going to lose him. And then other than that, I think, you know, there's a lot of players who still kind of either... There's certain players like Roebuck and Rod who have come through, earned a chance and don't deserve to be dropped, and therefore I think it's sensible to play them. There's other players where Akhavan Demura and JP Dupriya, do we want to keep building that relationship rather than tear it up and have Curtis Langdon and Josh Beaumont? Although, again, you know, is it good to have two options? I'm going down your road of no answer here, aren't I? There's, you know, there's players I would like to see come through. Conor Doherty, I'd like to see Luke James reintroduced. I'd like to see Byron McGuigan get a start. You know, these players where you think they could add something a bit different to the team. At the same time, we want to keep it a relatively strong team, so I'm not suggesting bring out the academy kids. So I think you know, your answer and my answer are probably going to be similar in that there's a balance here to be struck between blending a few less experienced people into that team while rewarding the people who are performing well but deserve more starts, but then also putting out a team that's strong enough to compete. You know, realistically, this competition is not nowhere near top of our priority list. It'd be great to get into the Challenge Cup later stages, but I think currently where we are in this season is we're still in the firefighting stage of trying to deal with Dimes' departure. And therefore, if we go out of Europe, and this is a dreadful thing to say after all the progress we've made, but this season it might not be the worst thing. And I think we should still go and put on a decent show. And if, as I say, if we get into the Challenge Cup, it's an opportunity to get a trophy, it'd be a superb one to do. But I think there's a lot of competition. The Premiership's going to get really intense. And there's a lot on Paul Deacon's plate as it is. So I would like to see a slightly rotated team, but I don't think the schedule is that demanding that we need to have wholesale changes. So I'd like, you know, the one or two, maybe three or four changes, bring some people in, try some people out. I'd love to see Rafi Quirk play a game for Sale because we haven't really seen it and he's shit hot. But that's probably my only kind of concession to the academy. Whereas the rest, I think, let's put out a good team, you know, let's take it to Edinburgh, have a solid forward pack and then see what the backs can do. And if that ends up in, you know, a defeat, I think that's fine. If we somehow, you know, go and nick a win and kind of get revenge for what they did to us at the AJ Bell, even better.
Happy with those answers, James?
Yeah, absolutely happy with that. I think there does need to be a blended approach. I mean, perhaps I'll just go straight into who I'd pick. I'd continue with Bevan Rod. You know, we're looking after him. We're taking him off nice and early. You know, he is young. We're asking him to use up an awful amount of strength and power in the scrum during the game. But I'd go with him again. I'd bring Langdon in. I say it every week at the moment. I think Acker's not playing poorly. The line-out seems to be much better with JP Dupriya in it. That said, Langdon just... You know, he's played so well. He has earned some starts for Sale. And I can't understand why there hasn't been some more natural rotation up till now. So he starts for me. I don't know what's happened with Will Griffjohn, but he plays a tight head for me. Second row, I think Jean-Luc Dupriya is back from a ban this week. So I think he needs game time. So he comes back in. And for me, he plays in the second row with JP Dupriya. Because I think that Kovas Visa, you know, he's had to play all the games either in the second row or at six all season. And I think he just might just need just one game off and then come back for the home game. For me, Visa is sort of first choice second row at the moment. But I think we do rest him. In the back row, I'd go Beaumont again at eight. I think it's a good way to bring him back in that maybe puts a little bit less pressure on his knee. I would, if he's fit... And I would have played him last week, as I said, but I want Cam Neild in this team. I think he's the type of person you can come in, you can bring in with almost no game time, and he will put in 20 tackles and play 80 minutes. And I think that that's what we're going to need. And then at open side, just for this one-off game, I'd move John O'Ross across to seven. I think we do need to rest Tom Curry. And I've chosen to have Jono at seven over Dugdale, who's on the bench. My backs, I'd have Cliff and Rob Dupreer. Rob Dupreer is getting game time, but not in his first choice position. And he is a more attacking fly half. You know, his passing, he stands flatter, and his passing game is much more broader than McGinty. I think McGinty's had a brilliant season, but I'd go Cliff and RDP. I think they're a really good duo. And I'd stick with Sam Hill in a sense of, let's play him with a 13 who knows how to play 13. Sam James moves to 13 for me. Luke James comes back in at fullback. Tom Roebuck keeps on the right wing. And on the left wing, I think McGuigan now needs to start and get some game time. So that's my 15. And on the bench, I'm also sort of balancing it. So I'm going to have Acker, Van der Merwe over someone like Ewan Ashman. Morozov, Jake Cooper-Woolley. So, you know, as in terms of a front row, you've got a strong front row to bring on there. And then after that, you know, I've got Postlethwaite I'd bring back in on the bench to cover second row, Dugdale to cover back row. I'd have the clerk on the bench. I don't think they would have taken him off when they did unless he was going to be travelling. So I think he in and amongst all the academy players that I have on the bench, he's kind of your experienced head. I would have Wilkinson on the bench. You know, I'd love De Klerk and Wilkinson to come on with 20 minutes to go. We've not seen Wilkinson for a long time. We don't know how whether he'll ever come back from this injury, right? But the fact is he's played in Europe before and he's shown some pretty good skills. And if he's fit, I think we should throw him in there. And then I'd have Doherty on the bench as well, covering the rest of the back line. So a bit of a mixture, but definitely a bit more of a flavour of academy, but still taking some of our big names too.
Right, let's do some predictions then. So, Alex, your thoughts for Saturday's game?
I think that we're going to win. I don't know why. I just feel quite positive about it. So, this is ridiculous and a stupid prediction, and I'll regret it. But I'm going to say Sale 22, Edinburgh 19. I think it'll be really close if we do win. But I just feel good. I don't know why.
I'm going in the same vein. I think Edinburgh's attacking problems are going to be really difficult to surmount for them. So I'm going to say Sale 17, Edinburgh 13 in a bit of another dour affair. James?
I just think with the extra energy in their players' back, they're going to break the buck of getting over 20 points and we still can't score many of our own. We have the same problem. So I agree it's going to be tight, but I just think Edinburgh 22, Sale 16.
Right, a nice mix of predictions there for a change. So that is it for our main pod this week. Thanks to everyone who follows us on Twitter, who engages with all our tweets, who tells us exactly what went right and wrong about the Sale lineup yesterday. It's always appreciated. And I guess the only other thing to say is we're now going to record our next Patreon episode. And so if you've not already signed up, and thank you to everyone who has already, we really appreciate it. Sign up, you know, we'll be tweeting out the link, you know, plenty of times over the weekend. This week, we're going to be looking at the six main contenders for the director of rugby job at Sale. So it's a really fun topic. We're really excited to be doing it. There's loads of fun stuff in the pipeline. You know, if you're not sick of hearing our voices after 45 or so minutes, well, there's more Shark Tank content for you on there as well. So, yeah, thank you to everyone for listening. The main pods will continue as normal. We'll be doing a pod after the Edinburgh game next week, you know, and we'll speak to you then. So that's everything from my side. Alex, James, anything from you?
Only thing from me is to say thank you to Ben and Opta for the stats, as always. And thank you to my mate George, who is a Worcester fan, and pointed out Ollie Morris to me before the game, as he then proceeded to run over half of our back line. So if we need a 13, I'd be signing him. But that's all from me.
Nothing from me.
Great. We'll speak to you guys next week.